No, Keshav Prabhu. But just for the few of us who do not, I'll give a brief introduction. A brief introduction is required because if I give a full introduction, it'll go to the whole Bhagavatam class. So Keshav Prabhu has been connected with Radha Gopinath Temple, I think practically from his early childhood. Of course, we all know him as the illustrious son of Sinaji Prabhu and the illustrious nephew of Krishna Chandra Prabhu, who incidentally, and of course not a matter of coincidence, but had given the class yesterday. So Mama yesterday and Banja today. So it's very, very auspicious. So Prabhuji has excellent academic qualifications. You know, he passed out from a very prestigious university in the US. And then now he's serving as a managing director of a very big industrial corporation. And over the years, has been very, very intimately connected with Radha Gopinath Temple. He, along with Radha Giridhari Prabhu, had set up a corporation which was primarily meant for funding the projects of Radha Gopinath Temple. And over the years, this has, as we can see, the transformation that has taken place in Radha Gopinath Temple has been to a very large extent due to his great contribution. So we are very fortunate to be able to hear him today. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Jaya Radha Madhava, Jaya Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava, Jaya Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha, Jaya Giri Varadhari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Teeravana Chariyana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava, Jaya Kunja Bihari. Canto 10, Chapter 11, text number 3. So I'll read the first line of the verse and then please repeat after that. Ulukalam vikashrantam damanabadam cha balakam kasyedam kuta ascharyam utpata iti kataraha. Translation. Krishna was bound by the rope to the ukala, the mortar which he was dragging. But how could he have pulled down the trees? Who had actually done this? Where was the source for this incident? Considering all these astounding things, the cowherd men were doubtful and bewildered. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The cowherd men were very much agitated because the child Krishna, after all, had been standing between the two trees. And if by chance the trees had fallen upon him, he would have been smashed. But he was standing as he was, and still the things had happened. So who could have done all this? How could these events have happened in such a wonderful way? The considerations were some of the reasons they were agitated and bewildered. They thought, however, that by chance, Krishna had been saved by God so that nothing had happened to him. So, this is actually, I'm not really a person who's deserving to be in this position. As you will, you know, come across in, you know, the translation and much of what I have to say, some of the great devotees that we have, they put you into these sort of situations so that you become a little bit more Krishna conscious. And, you know, this is clearly something which is, you know, I'm like a little bit of a fish out of water. I give a lot of lectures and presentations and stuff, but it's always all in the business environment. So this is sometimes, you know, something like punching above your weight in terms of, so, you know, my dear God brother and friend, God Gopal Prabhu, he's the one who for the last 2 years has been pursuing me. And then finally, somehow through his spiritual machinations, he has managed to get me to sit here and bore you for the next 45 minutes to 1 hour. But I shall attempt to, you know, give some sort of a Srimad Bhagavatam class this morning. So actually, you know, if you read through, you know, this particular verse and the next verse, here it says again, I'll just read out the translation. Krishna was bound by the rope to the Ukala, the mota, which he was dragging. But how could he have pulled down the trees? Who had actually done it? Where was the source for this incident? Considering all these astounding things, the cowherd men were doubtful and bewildered. In the next verse, it is said, then all the cowherd boys said, it is Krishna who has done this. When he was in between the two trees, the mota fell crosswise. Krishna dragged the mota and the two trees fell down. After that, two beautiful men came out of the trees. We have seen this with our very own eyes. So, you know, the pastimes of Lord Krishna, they are so fascinating and so interesting because, you know, the Lord, I think yesterday Krishna Chandra Prabhu spoke about the absolute, you know, power of Lord Krishna and him being the source of all, of everything that exists. So, you know, Krishna Katha is also, you know, very interesting, very fascinating. And the deeper you go into it, actually, the more fascinated you actually become. So, you know, we've come across in the last, you know, in the first 11 chapters about all Lord Krishna's birth and, you know, the various pastimes that he has had. But I think one of the very important pastimes, at least to me as an individual, has been about these two beautiful men who came out of the trees, you know, Nala Kuvera and Manigriva. Because their condition and their situation is something very synonymous with what actually happens to us in our day-to-day lives. So you had, you know, if you take a background of these two gentlemen, at least the way, you know, it appears initially, is that they were the illustrious sons of Kubera, the god of wealth. Kubera was a very close associate of Lord Shiva. And so both Nala Kuvera and Manigriva actually were brought up in the association and in the service of Lord Shiva. And then many years later, even though they were grown-up men, they were actually, they fell down because of their position of wealth and pride. And one day they were actually at a lake with celestial damsels in very compromising positions and situations, you know, enjoying themselves. And Narad Muni appeared there. I'm sure all of you have heard this story many, many times over in the last few days because, you know, these verses are all covering that. But the thing to note from this is that, you know, when Narad Muni appeared there, the spiritual damsels who were there, or the celestial damsels who were there, they immediately covered themselves and, you know, were in a very shameful sort of situation. But because Nala Kuvera and Manigriva were so intoxicated with Varuni, they completely ignored the presence of Narad Muni. And then Narad Muni, being the great Acharya and the great Guru, you know, the one of the foremost Gurus in our Sampradaya, he then took mercy on these two men. Essentially, they were just wasting their lives, similar to what most of us, not people, not the brahmacharis in this temple, but people like myself, who end up, you know, spending so much time, you know, in this material world, you know, you end up wasting your time. That Narad Muni took mercy on them, and then he cursed them to be, he didn't curse them, he actually blessed them to become the two Arjuna trees in the courtyard of Yashoda Mai and Nanda Maharaj. If you go to see what our situation is in life, you know, today, we end up actually having very similar problems. These two gentlemen were in such a spiritual situation, in such a good condition, rendering service to Lord Shiva. And then over a period of time, what happens is that you start getting so used to the service that you're doing that you sometimes end up losing the importance of that service. And you end up going and looking at, you know, experimenting with different things. And sometimes those experiments land up in changing the very state or situation that you're in. And this is what happened to these two gentlemen. So this Varuni had intoxicated their material body. Their wealth and position and the pride that they had probably completely covered their, you know, their subtle bodies, you know, the Man Maya Kosh, the Vigyan Maya Kosh, these are all completely covered. And as a consequence, they, you know, did not end up doing the most basic of things, you know, when Narad Muni appeared there. Now, if you take parallels in terms of what is happening in our lives also today, you know, today, unfortunately, people celebrate more, you know, these sort of wrong activities that people do. If you see the most popular newspaper that we have today, which is the Times of India, I see so many people actually, instead of reading the front page of Times of India, actually go to page 3 first to see, you know, what are the things which are, it is the most popular part actually of Times of India. And there was an opinion poll that Times of India took, and the most popular part of the newspaper actually is, you know, this supplement which runs by the name of each city. So we have Bombay Times, Pune Times, Ahmedabad Times, etc. And what is covered in there is really not really any relevant news as such, you know. It's just something that people want, you know, it just ends up running the gossip mills and the gossip factories that are there. But coming back to, you know, to this particular verse and, you know, all the verses before and after this, it was really the mercy of Narad Muni to curse, you know, the, rather to bless these two individuals, Nala Kuvera and Manigriva, to be located in the courtyard of Yashoda Mai and Nanda Maharaj. They were there for over 100 Devta years. And as, you know, Lord Chaitanya says, you know, you humbler than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree. So they were there in that position for 100 Devta years before they actually got to witness the pastimes of Lord Krishna firsthand. There are very few people, even from, you know, when Lord Krishna descends here, he descends with all his associates. But, you know, if you see, because of the mercy of Narad Muni, Manigriva and Nala Kuver, they actually witness right from the birth of Lord Krishna right through to the time that they were delivered. And so this is something which, you know, is so representative of, you know, the pure devotee of the Lord. You know, the I had asked actually Radharat Maharaj long back, you know, and I got confused because there are two meanings that, you know, I've heard regularly in Srila Prabhupada's lectures on the meaning of the word guru. You know, the one popular meaning or reference is the guru is essentially, you know, the person who dispels ignorance and darkness and brings about enlightenment. So that is in the form of a noun. But in the form of a verb, guru means heavy. So in this one single instance, actually, Narad Muni has delivered, you know, both the essences of the meaning of the word guru. He brings about that enlightenment by positioning them as these two trees to witness the pastimes of you know, Lord Krishna firsthand. And on the other hand, you know, the punishment is a heavy punishment, I think. The inference for us to draw is that in life today, without undergoing major tapasya, nothing really meaningful is achieved. So they had to undergo these 100 years of you know, being tolerant like a tree, seeing all the seasons, etc., before they actually ended up having, you know, the greatest benediction of seeing Lord Krishna's pastimes. Whenever I hear this story of these Arjuna trees, it reminds me of a little incident of our Guru Maharaj, Radhanath Maharaj. Many years ago, actually, the first time that he visited my in-law's house, you know, my father-in-law and my wife Namamrita, they used to live in Tata Institute of Fundamental Research, in TIFR. And so he visited them for the first time, I think it was in the year 1986. And they were showing him around, you know, it's a TIFR, I don't know if any of you have been there, but TIFR has a very beautiful campus. And it is, you know, there's full of trees, it's right by the seaside. So it's, and in a way, you know, people in that scientific community are completely cut off from the hustle and bustle of Mumbai. And so Maharaj was very interested in taking a round of the campus. So when he went around there, and my father-in-law, being a scientist, you know, loves to explain things, etc., etc. So during this tour, he took Maharaj to a huge tree, which was an African baobab tree. So this African baobab tree was approximately, at that time, this is what my father-in-law mentioned, was over 400 years old. And you can actually determine the age of the tree, you know, by, you know, from its bark and the number of circles that it has, etc. But it was over 400 years old. And after hearing this, Maharaj actually went up to the tree, and, you know, the baobab tree is almost 80 to 100 feet tall. And it can be 50 to 70 feet in circumference. So it's a huge tree. But Maharaj went up to the tree, put his hands around the tree, and he whispered the Maha Mantra into the ears of the tree. So remember, you know, we remember this this incident. So, you know, whenever this story comes up of Nala Kuver and Manigriva and, you know, the Yamala Arjuna trees, this is one of the incidences, you know, that that come to mind. The other, you know, inference that we can take from this episode is that, you know, based on your actions, you know, you end up getting, you know, those sort of reactions. So since Nala Kuver and Manigriva were so focused on frolicking in their nudity, the punishment that they got, you know, from Narad Muni, which actually turned out to be a blessing, was to be in the form of these trees for, you know, 100 devta years, which I guess in our lifetime runs into millenniums. But, you know, there was one question that I always had, which is that, you know, when Lord Krishna descends, you know, he descends here along with all his eternal associates. So what are the position of these two persons, you know, Nala Kuvera and Manigriva? Because, you know, when you read it specifically in the 10th canto, the background that is available starts really from the fact that they were the sons of Kuvera. The answer to this actually lies, you know, in, you have to ultimately, whenever you get bewildered, you have to turn towards, one of the great spiritual sources, any of the great spiritual sources. And in this case, a lot of background of these two gentlemen actually is covered under Gopal Champu, written by Srila Jiva Goswami. And in fact, from the very second chapter onwards, which is, you know, the scene opens there with Lord Krishna and all his associates, including the all his gopas, And it talks about even Madhu Mangal, you know, clowning his way, you know, just like he was in the pastime that we read about here in Goloka. And then Lord Krishna moves away with his gopas, and Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mai are you know, sitting there along with all the brothers and wives of Nanda Maharaj, I mean Upananda and etc. etc. And then they decide to actually want to hear the stories of the pastimes of Lord Krishna. So they turn to two people there, Snigakanta and Madhukanta. And there actually Nanda Maharaj asks them to describe the pastimes of the Lord, which is going to happen because they are still all in the spiritual world. It is, they are going to still come and have their pastimes in Vrindavan. So at that point in time, Nanda Maharaj asks the two of them. And in fact, you can see the standard of etiquette which is brought up because it is explained here, you know, in Gopal Champu, that the two brothers actually turn to Nanda Maharaj and say, you please decide which one of us will speak because the other person will then listen. And then Nanda Maharaj actually turns, and I'll just quote from here because it'll give you an idea in terms of what their position was once upon a time. Yeah, Nanda Maharaj, this is what he says to these two brothers. You know everything. Please astonish us by relating stories about ourselves, which will happen when we descend into Vrindavan. So they were in such an exalted position actually that they, and then you know, you see right from chapter 2 onwards, they explain between the two of them when, you know, one speaks and then the other requests the other to speak. They explain the entire pastimes of Lord Krishna until they come to the point where their own story is to be spoken about. And so at that point in time, they are completely silent. They don't say anything. And then Nanda Maharaj says that your silence is itself explaining what is going to happen. And they actually skip this portion, you know, which is there in the 10th canto, and they go straight to glorifying Narad Muni for, you know, making them into those Arjuna trees and witnessing then the pastimes of Lord Krishna. So they were in such an exalted position actually that in Goloka also they were the official storytellers. And if you look at it, you know, from that condition, they ended up actually becoming the sons of Kuvera and then frolicking with damsels, you know, not looking at Narad Muni and giving him respect and etc. etc. So you can imagine what the situation is of people like us who don't start off actually in such an exalted position to begin with. And, you know, you end up actually having to face, you know, so many of these difficulties. So the only way to really manage this is to turn towards, you know, our spiritual master, to turn towards other devotees to, you know, sort of hold us up in our spiritual being and, you know, allow us not to fall down to such levels. There's another little interesting story that, and, you know, some realizations that I've had around that, which I thought I could share with you. You know, as Narad Muni has shown, you know, such amazing compassion to these two individuals over here, in a similar situation, you know, Radhanath Maharaj has been, you know, the lifeblood of this temple. The only privilege or the thing that I have is that I have known Maharaj for 27 years. And he originally came here in 1985. And since that time, Radhanath Maharaj has been, you know, just like Narad Muni in this particular instance, you know, doing things, you know, and taking care of all of us to, you know, bring up this temple. Just a week ago, on Sunday, we saw, you know, some films from the old times and what the state of Radha Gopinath temple was. I'm not sure how many of you were here, you know, to see that, but to see this transformation, it is quite amazing. And all this has happened only because of, you know, the amount of time and effort and difficulties that Maharaj has taken. You know, I, Prabhuji, you know, while introducing, mentioned that, you know, I was studying in the United States, and I studied in Philadelphia. And, you know, when you study in these universities, they're huge universities, you're away from home, and there is no one there to actually look at you or supervise you. You know, you're free to do whatever you want. You know, things will not be heard, things will not be repeated. You know, your parents have known nothing. You have the option of actually ticking a box which says that your parents won't even get to know the grades that you get. They only get to know whether you have passed or whether you have failed. Even though they are paying for your tuitions. Of course, I couldn't do that, otherwise my father would be very upset. But the point is that you're completely left, you know, to yourself. And in such a situation, it's very easy to, you know, if Nala Kuver and Manigriva, who were the official, you know, citizens of Gokul, could come all the way down and do all these things, then what is the position of people like us? So, Maharaj, you know, he is always so concerned about everything, you know, and he's so concerned about the well-being of, you know, all his disciples. Even people who are not his disciples, whoever he has come in touch with. Because at that time, Maharaj was not initiating Guru. But so he would take the trouble of, you know, Maharaj's main service in those days was preaching at the universities there, you know. So he had a number of universities that he would preach in. And he would do that in a very subtle fashion, because he would hold these vegetarian cooking classes. And it was a very intelligent thing to do, because students are always hungry and they're always poor. So if you have these cooking classes, you know, and at the end of the class you get to eat whatever you have cooked. It was a very big attraction. So Maharaj would be traveling around in that region, you know. He had eastern part of the United States where he used to go to these colleges. And whenever he'd come by Philadelphia, he used to phone me up and, you know, tell me that he's going to come by in so-and-so train. And so I would go to the station, you know, to meet Maharaj. And then he'd jump off the train in Philadelphia, and then we'd sit on 30th Street Station. And he would, you know, speak for an hour, sometimes 2 hours, you know, giving Krishna Katha and speaking from Chaitan Charitamrit. And but, you know, the thing is that whenever Maharaj's call would come, being the sort of base person that I was, the most important thing that I used to think of was his kachoris that he would bring with him every time he came. Because Maharaj used to always, from his bag of tricks, you know, take out two things. One was the kachoris and the other one was his pineapple halwa. And so, you know, from the previous night, the whole night I would be dreaming about having, you know, these kachoris and pineapples. He just didn't... There were no Indian stores in those days. You know, today you get a lot of Indian stores and food. But coming to that, you know, these kachoris would be actually, this was really Maharaj Prasad, because he used to cook it himself. And it was many years later that I actually got to hear from him about his pastimes as a cook. And I thought maybe I can share that with you all. I'm not sure whether you've heard this from him before or not, but... I'm sure at some point in time you may have. But as a student, Radhanath Maharaj, you know, he used to basically, you know, go to school full-time student, 8 hours. And then his first major job was that of a cook, assistant cook in a hospital. And so that was another 8-hour job. So it was actually a 16-hour day that he would have... you know, just between these two things. And then after that, he would do his homework and whatever else was required, you know, to be done for his school and classes. So in the morning, he would be at school. You know, usually school in the United States starts at 7 or whatever. It gets over by lunchtime. And then he would start the second shift as a cook in this hospital. And it was extremely hard work, actually, because there were... hardly 7 or 8 cooks. They had to cook for between 350 to 500 people. It was a 350 to 500 bed hospital in just outside of Chicago. And so he was the assistant cook who used to cook for these 8 hours, you know. And as a student cooking, you know, sometimes he would get extremely tired. And then he would obviously take a short cat nap. So his favorite place for taking the cat nap was, you know, in, you know, when you have these sort of, and by the way, you know, why the work was so hard is that there were these 7 or 8 cooks, 350 to 500 beds, and they had to actually cook for 7 different types of cuisine or food. Because, you know, something different for people, you know, suffering from diabetes, something different for people who are suffering from terminal diseases like cancer, etc. Something different for people who came in, you know, just with, you know, other type of operations, etc. So it was 7 different cuisines, you know, hardly 7 to 8 cooks, and for 350 to 500 people. So it was continuous hard work. And so when he'd get tired, he used to take this cat nap inside the lowest section of the cold storage. You know, the cold storage would have the whole bottom section or portion was actually filled with potatoes. And it was like a huge cold storage, not like a fridge. It's like a room by itself. So usually nobody came into the cold storage, you know, at that time. So he used to bury himself inside these potatoes and go to sleep. And it's very, you know, if you go to see, it's such a smart thing to do because, you know, potatoes actually exude a lot of heat. And so, you know, you're right inside them. So, you know, the cold storage, of course, is cold. But you can probably, you know, still survive and not get hypothermia in there. So this was a blissful pastime of his from time to time, you know, when the days were hard and, you know, when he'd get extremely taxed. One day, actually, you know, there was this Afro-American nurse, you know, or lady rather, who came in to pick up some potatoes from the fridge. And so she removed 4 or 5 of these potatoes, and suddenly she saw a leg in there. she just slammed closed the, you know, the fridge, and started screaming and shouting. Maharaj didn't hear anything because the door of that cold storage was closed. And so they immediately called the police and all. She thought somebody was dead and buried inside, you know, that cold storage. And so all the cooks came and the hospital staff came. Everybody came there and police came. And then they started pulling out all the potatoes, and then out comes Radharan Maharaj, quite bewildered, not understanding what has happened actually. But, you know, this is just to correlate back to, you know, Maharaj's cooking, you know. And so this was, you know, I thought I'd share with you a little bit of, you know, this pastime of Maharaj's. Because I used to always ask him, you know, that Maharaj, where did you, I mean, of course, Srila Prabhupada taught, you know, a lot of the devotees, you know, about these pineapple halwa, and his recipes were there, etc. But if you haven't had Maharaj's kachoris and pineapple halwas, you're really missing something. It was because he really has a mastery on cooking, and it's all come through, you know, so much of hard work, actually. So, you know, this whole story and, you know, discussion about, you know, nothing in this world really comes about without actually having gone through, you know, as Srila Prabhupada says, you know, the only way to purify gold is to put it through fire. So you have to go through, you know, this tapasya. So what you see of Maharaj today, I mean, the point I'm trying to make is that, you know, you see this beautiful building, but, you know, you don't end up seeing, you know, the all the foundations which have gone into, you know, building this, you know, this beautiful structure. He's gone through such amazingly, you know, difficult times and so much tapasya to actually get to where he is, and, you know, and then shower his mercy on us. Just like how Narad Muni showered mercy on these two gentlemen. And, you know, if you actually, you know, if I go back and, you know, I had not planned this, but you know, if you go back to the 10th canto and go through, you know, text, I think is it 38 onwards. It's very interesting to actually, you know, based on whatever I've mentioned about, you know, Gopal Champu and, you know, the original position of Nala Kuvera and Manigriva, I'll just read out, you know, some of these verses. It'll put the whole thing in perspective, you know, of what Lord Krishna has to say after he has delivered these two souls. I'll just read out the translations from text 38 onwards. Henceforth, may all your words describe. This is what Lord Krishna is telling Manigriva and Nala Kuvera. Henceforth, may all your words. This is what they are telling Lord Krishna. Henceforth, may all our words describe your pastimes. May our ears engage in oral reception of your glories. May our hands, legs, and other senses engage in actions pleasing to you. And may our minds always think of your lotus feet. May our heads offer our obeisances to everything within this world, because all things are also your different forms. And may our eyes see the forms of Vaishnavas who are non-different from you. Then Shukdev Goswami continued, the two young demigods thus offered prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although Sri Krishna, the Supreme Godhead, is the master of all and was certainly Gokuleshwar, the master of Gokul, he was bound to the wooden mortar by the ropes of the gopis, and therefore, smiling widely, he spoke to the sons of Kuvera the following words. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, the great Saint Narada is very merciful. By his curse, he showed the greatest favor to both of you, who were mad after material opulence and who had thus become blind. Although you fell from the higher planet, Swargalok, and became trees, you were most favored by him. I knew all these incidences from the very beginning. When one is face to face with the sun, there is no longer darkness for one's eyes. Similarly, when one is face to face with a sadhu, a devotee, who is fully determined and surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one will no longer be subject to material bondage. And now this second last verse. O Nala Kuvera and Manigriva, now you may both return home. Since you desire to be always absorbed in my devotional service, your desire to develop love and affection for me will be fulfilled, and now you will never fall from that platform. So, you know, what I was mentioning is that originally they were from Golok Vrindavan and from Goloka, and now, you know, after this pastime, they have been now assured by Lord Krishna that they will permanently be, you know, in that position. I just mentioned another incident to you of, and, you know, some realizations that I've had around that. You know, during these college days of mine, you know, after I'd finished my graduation ceremony, actually Namamrita and myself were both there. In fact, my father had also come. But then he had business and he, you know, left for his business. And so we requested Maharaj that, you know, we'd like to come to New Vrindavan, we'd like to meet with you and, you know, seek your blessings. Because after that, we were about to soon get married and then I was to, you know, sort of start work. So Maharaj said, yes, you know, I'm going to be in Washington, D.C. He was there to meet Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj at that time in Washington, D.C. So he said, come to Washington, D.C. and then we'll drive together from Washington, D.C. to New Vrindavan. It's about a six-hour drive. So Namamrita and me, we went there and met Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, met Radhanath Swami. And so when Maharaj was driving us back, you know, for those 6 hours, continuously, he was telling us stories from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you know. And it was quite amazing because, you know, in the U.S. it's high speed, you know, and freeways and things. But I was sitting next to Maharaj. Namamrita was sitting just behind. Maharaj used to have those big vans, you know, and which had the Jagannath DTs and it had a kitchen and everything in there. It was a completely self-contained unit, one of those big Ford vans. So in that six-hour drive, he, of course, you know, we discussed a lot of, stories. He gave us a lot of stories from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. But actually, just before we got onto that journey, I was asking Maharaj, Maharaj, please tell me, you know, give me some instructions, you know, in terms of, because I'm now just graduated from college and I want to now, you know, I'm going to start the next phase of my life. So, you know, are there some instructions, you know, for me? And initially, you know, you know how Maharaj is, you know, he said, what can I, I'm only, studied only first year at university, I haven't graduated, you have graduated from, you know, one of the top universities in the world, what can I tell you? And, you know, he'd start laughing and, you know, shaking his shoulders. And so he kept on telling Maharaj, please Maharaj, you know, this is not, and I want some serious advice and instruction, you know, this is not time to, you know, embarrass, you know, me with saying these sort of things, etc., etc. He was just not, he just used to keep changing the subject and talking about something, something else. And then we embarked upon this, you know, 5.5-6 hour drive, where he was continuously telling us stories from the Chetan Charitamrita. And it was, you know, the drive was also very interesting because when Maharaj would reach a point where he would be quite excited, he used to actually turn around and look at both me and Namamrita. And at that point in time, you know, my hearing ability used to be at its lowest, looking in front of the road. But I think Maharaj was extremely practiced in this, you know, it was, nothing ever happened. He didn't deviate by one inch either ways. But I'm coming to my point here that, you know, then towards maybe about half an hour before we reached New Vrindavan, Maharaj suddenly became a little bit grave. And he just mentioned this one little thing in here, saying that what is most important for you to remember is that greed and pride cometh before the fall. So always make sure that you are, you know, you don't get too proud and you don't get too greedy. And then he immediately switched back to Chetan Charitamrita and was in his, you know how Maharaj is very animated when he is speaking, especially from Chetan Charitamrita. And so, you know, this message which he gave me at that point in time, I think is probably one of the most important instructions that I've received, you know, from him. Because, you know, in the sort of world that I am in, I see a few people here also who are, you know, from the business world. My dear friend here is in the stock market and, you know, these sort of situations where, you know, you have difficulties with these things. Now, this story is one, again, which reminds you of, you know, some amount of pride which had come because of the position that Manigriva and Nala Kuvera had. But I want to spend a little bit more time on, you know, this subject of greed. I think I have another maybe 5 minutes, I'll just wrap up in 5 minutes on this subject of greed. We all know there are three gates to hell. Each one of them is equally big and difficult. But in the case of greed, you have the maximum collateral damage that takes place. See, if you're lustful, you cause yourself grief. At the most, you'll cause grief to your wife or to, you know, somebody and, you know, the person who you're lusting with, etc. If you're proud, you end up actually, you know, elevating yourself to a certain position and then getting smashed, you know, by the Lord. But when you're greedy, the collateral damage that you end up creating is extremely high. And, you know, we are seeing that actually today, the whole country is at a standstill in terms of, you know, its decision making from the government. Because the level of greed that people have had, the politicians have had, it's mentioned in our shastras. Lord Krishna says, you know, to Arjuna anyway, that in the Kali Yuga, you know, you'll have demons who become, you know, part of the government and administration. But if you see the level of greed that is there today, you know, the Reddy brothers who are just recklessly mining in Karnataka, you know, with no concern to the environment, no concern to anybody or anything. You see this 2G scam, you know, the amount of thousands and lakhs of crores that people have taken. Now they're talking about a coal scam where coal mines have been given and concessions have been given at extremely cheap rates, etc. So the key thing is, you know, obviously it is a disease. All these are diseases. And as you know, that the only way to understand a disease or to bring it a little bit more under control is to go down to the root of the disease, you know, and then try your best to, you can't just treat the symptoms, you have to go to the root cause. So I wanted to share one realization with you on this matter of greed, you know. What is greed and, you know, how does it happen? And, you know, the automatic question that comes about is that, is it wrong to be ambitious? Because usually people are ambitious They want to do something good. They want to do something, you know, improve their position, their greatness, achieve something in life. And then from there, they end up, you know, falling down and getting stuck in this greed, you know, and become something which is so overpowering. You made your first, when you start off with no money, you say, I wish I could make my first 1 lakh rupees. Then when you made your first 1 lakh rupees, then you reset the goalpost and the target to be 10 lakh rupees. And once you've made 10 lakh, then you go to 1 crore and then to 10 crores and then to $1 billion and then to $10 billion, you know. So it never stops. So is it, so what is this correlation between this ambition and this greed, you know? And I came across one, you know, in one lecture, a statement that was made, which I thought I'll share with you all. Greed is when ambition crosses the line of ethics. There is no harm in being ambitious. But when you want to fulfill your ambition by crossing the line of ethics, that is when you start becoming greedy. And, you know, this is something that actually I was always trying to figure out, this, you know, these instructions and this advice which Maharaj gave me, you know, about greed and pride. Because in business, actually, the easiest thing for you to become is greedy. It's a very natural consequence of what happens. And, you know, you are ambitious to grow your company. Even in your own spiritual life also, you may be ambitious to, you know, to be a better devotee. There's no harm in actually having that ambition of improving, of going ahead. But it doesn't, I guess, greed is not something that's so common in a temple environment as much as outside. But this realization is something that I thought I should, you know, share with you all. That, you know, once you've understood this, you understand the geography of where ambition is, where greed is, where the line of ethics is. And then, of course, what is most important for you is to understand what this line of ethics is about. And that is why we have to come here and listen, you know, come to the temple, spend time with other devotees, hear from them, so that that line of ethics becomes, in your vision, it is so broad that, you know exactly when you're crossing the line, and you always stay on this side of that Lakshman Rekha as opposed to cross over to the other side. So I thought I'll just share that with you all, and sorry if I've made you, if I've repeated various things which you may have heard, you know, this is not really, as I said, I'm a little bit of a fish out of water sitting in this position. I can give hours of lectures on various things to do with business and management, etc. So please forgive me if I've said something which is not appropriate, or if I have ended up boring all of you. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Prabhu, specifically the last part. The ambition, you cross the ambition without the ethics, that is a greed. Wonderful. Well, I am asking a question based on your realization.
I was always, my most fearful thing today was that my dear friend Anand Vrindavan Prabhu will come here. You know, it's like, you know, I always feel like, you know, that when I was thinking last night only, you know, it's like, you know, I'm sitting in the position of Sunil Gavaskar, you know, at 5 feet 2.5 inches tall, with a gentleman called Thompson coming into bowl at high speed, you know, and in those days there was no helmet, no nothing, you know, just standing there, you know, to fend for yourself. But anyway, not actually Sunil Gavaskar, Chandrasekhar, who didn't know how to bat in those days. But anyway, please, Prabhuji.
So, Prabhuji, during your father's time, the business was not that complicated, not that very much contaminated the way it is right now. At the same time, we don't have to compromise our ethics. At the same time, we have to make progress also for the sake of our company, for the sake of our well-being. So there will be lots of temptations, there will be lots of allurements where we get tempted. I wanted to know very clearly, how do you take care of yourself that you don't cross the limit? There should be something by which gives you thorough boost, or there could be something by which you get lots of strength by which you are able to protect yourself. Because at every step in your business, there are temptations, there are allurements. And you do one thing wrong and you make lots of money. And that one thing you feel it, oh, it's a common. And this big shot I will miss and I'll not be able to earn for years and years to come. And only one mistake, one wrong thing I have to do it. But that there should be something by which completely compels, it makes you protected. No, I don't want to do this. What is that strength and where do you get it?
I think, Prabhuji, I'd like to sort of start answering this by saying that, the whole thing depends on your realization and, your understanding, really. And there are so many examples that are there. Of course, ultimately, I had once asked Maharaj something similar to this, saying, what do I need to do? All this is so complicated, And you work, travel, I don't know how my father reads, every day. He reads 3-4 hours a day. But I find it difficult to read 3-4 minutes a day because, all the work that you have and so many other difficulties. Maharaj has always said that, you have to chant the holy names of the Lord and somehow or the other come to the temple, be associated, with the devotees and always pray to Radharani. She's the one who will, she's our mother and she's the one who will, mother will always take care of the child, no matter how astray the child has gone. So whatever it is, if you're in a maze, once I remember Maharaj giving me this example, that if you're in a maze or a labyrinth and you want to find your way through and back, you often have that, you thought of that example of that thread, that you end up having a thread or a ball of thread behind you so that as you're walking, the thread unwinds itself. So you can at least retrace your path back, So that is really just the chanting of the holy names of the Lord, really. And if you associate yourself, you read from the spiritual scriptures, I guess you listen to lectures from people other than myself, not like people like me, but from other exalted souls. Your realization, becomes quite clear. But, Prabhuji, as you see, this ambition, greed thing, now Olympics are coming up. I'll try to answer your question in a more mundane fashion, by giving two examples. One is the Olympics are coming up. If you just look at recent Olympic history, 30 years, 40 years ago, there was no cases where people were caught, taking anabolic steroids and things like that for enhancing performance. If you just looked at the athlete, you could make out, they didn't have these huge bulging muscles and stuff, They looked extremely fit, they looked extremely strong, but they didn't have any of these this thing. Now in today's day and age, to improve your, there's nothing wrong in terms of improving your timing, having an ambition to win a gold medal for your country, etc. But then the problem comes when you start taking these drugs and doing all these things, which starts enhancing your performance. And that's clearly, in a very mundane sense also, crossing the line of ethics. In terms of your question of, things have become complicated and difficult, etc. Well, the only way to purify gold is to put it through fire. The problem is that people want to take these shortcuts. They want to reach their goal very quickly. And that is where, all these problems really take place. There's a very famous saying from Gandhiji, which says that there is enough in this world for every man's need, but not enough for one man's greed. So the only way to temper your ambition and greed is to come to this realization, that you really don't want to cross that line of ethics. And yeah, things are difficult, but I mean, one example that I can give you is that I like to spend my holidays and time, in the outdoors, in nature. And, away from this, cities and things like that. And actually, when you look at nature, there's so many answers to various questions that you end up having, The Lord just reveals, through that. I don't know how many of you have ever witnessed whitewater rafting. It's called white water because when the river is flowing and there are big stones which are in the river, and the water quickly, when it's flowing fast, it hits the rocks, it starts foaming. And it becomes white. That's why it's called white water rafting. So when you look at the river, there are so many big stones which are there, And the whole secret of it is to actually go through those stones. And the amazing thing is that no matter how big or turbulent the river is, there is always a path which has been created, which is a clear path that the person who's kayaking or canoeing can go through. So no matter how complicated things are, there is always a clear path which is there. We have to learn how to read that path. You know, these experts, you know, in whitewater rafting, they through their practice learn how to read the river and understand where that path is, you know, through which they can smoothly go through without bumping and colliding. So there's always a path which is available. That is a clean path. It's for us to actually, you know, realize that, you know, that path exists. There are a lot of other bumpy things. You recognize those bumpy things by understanding these line of ethics, sticking to the right side of the line of ethics, and constantly working towards finding a solution, you know, to do it in the right way. Because that solution does exist. It may be difficult. You may have to spend a lot of more time and effort. But then you have to be prepared to do that. Otherwise, if you cross the other line, there is no control in terms of what will happen, you know. And as Angira Muni explains to Chitraketu Maharaj, you know, the source of your happiness becomes the source of your distress. Here, right here, Nalakuve and Manigriva enjoying themselves with these damsels for a few minutes. And then 100 devta years as a tree. You see what has happened to these guys in the 2G scam. I can guarantee you that most of these chaps, or at least I think, that many of these people would have said, "Arey, bhai, oh, that 1,000 crore that I took, I wish I hadn't taken it." Because, you know, you go into jail, it has, you know, complete negative impact, you know, on yourself, on your position, what people think about you. Some of these bureaucrats also have gone in there. Some of them are still in there. So, you know, once you have this realization in terms of, you know, what the consequences can be, and I think that the Shastras explain in so much detail, you know, what you have that moment in glory and then you have a lifetime of suffering, you know. So you've got to make that call. I hope I've been able to answer something. Yes, Prabhuji.
Prabhuji, actually most of my question was answered because Anand Vrindavan Prabhu asked such questions that...
I know, they're really googlies, I tell you, or bouncers.
when you are giving the class, I was just thinking that in that age, Dwapar Yuga and before that also, that sons of Kuver, they were so spoiled. And just because of money, and wealth was the cause of their fall. And when you are giving the class, I was just thinking in the mind that we have these two brothers, Chaitanya and yourself, and Naji Prabhu, family you are born. How come with born in such a nice, illustrious family, you could maintain divinity? Because normally we the same example we are studying here is two sons from a rich family getting spoiled, and here we see two sons becoming so divine. And
Prabhuji, first I should just correct that neither of us are divine in any way, shape or form. We are still below. We are not even reached basement level in the building yet. But actually, you know, whatever we are, to tell you honestly, it's only because of Radhanath Swami. And that's why I thought, you know, in this whatever little talk that I have, you know, I try to narrate a few examples, you know, of Maharaj and his mercy. And the unfortunate thing is, it's not that we don't end up doing the right things, but sometimes we end up doing so many wrong and sinful things, and, you know, Maharaj keeps taking all the reactions, you know, of that. So I guess the biggest fear that I have of doing, of walking on the wrong path, is that he will 100% take, you know, all the reaction of that. And that's something that I just, you know, can't afford to do. You know, forget about anything else. But it's, you know, it's difficult. And I think unless you are constantly in touch, you know, I try to come here Sunday morning for Bhagavatam class, you know, allow something to get into this thick skull of mine. And of course, my father has been, you know, so much more, he's been a big influence. Maharaj has been a big influence. And I would say that both my grandfathers have been very great influences. And especially from a spiritual standpoint, my maternal grandfather, you know. In fact, in the most detailed version of the Nala Kuver Manigriva story, I heard from him. It's not mentioned here that they are associates of Lord Shiva. I mean, if you read in the 10th canto. But he'd mentioned a couple of things, and I'm a little unclear about it today, because, you know, after all, my brain is like a horse and it's like a sieve, you know, you forget about all these things. But at some point he'd mentioned that after this, you know, they went to a place called Damodar Kund. And I'm not able to exactly quote it. In fact, I was asking Gaur Gaurang Prabhu also the other day, but, you know, that, you know, some of our devotees were planning to go to Muktanand, and then unfortunately the, you know, the plane crash took place. But from Muktanand you go to a place called Damodar Kund, which is where after, I believe, I'm not sure whether this is 100% true or not, but Nala Kuvera and Manigriva actually went to take, you know, their bath there before they went back to their eternal abode. But the point I'm making is that I think some of this has come basically from every night. You know, I had a deal with my grandfather, because what happened was that I was the first of the grandchildren, right? And so you're all enthusiastic to handle the first grandchild. And I had my sister in 2 years and then my brother in 2 years. So my mother was quite a bit occupied, obviously, with, you know. So I used to go and spend time with my grandfathers. They were my two favorite persons. And the deal with my maternal grandfather was that every night he had to tell me a new story. Or if he told me the old story, it had to be with more details, obviously. It can't be the same, you know, repetition of that. And I think as a consequence of that deal, he told me a lot of, you know, stories from the Ramayana and, you know, the Puranas, actually. So I think, I mean, to some extent, that is there, you know. So irrespective of how far you go, ultimately, you know, the fruit doesn't land very far from the tree. Even in the case of Nala Kuvera and Manigriva, yes, they had this deviation. All of us have deviations, you know. But if you hang on to that thread, you'll know how to get back to where you are. I mean, you don't ultimately get lost fully. So I think that the whole secret is to just hang on to that. No matter what happens, no matter what you go through and all that, you know, just hang on to that thread somehow. I hope I've been able to answer your question, Prabhuji. Should we? Hare Krishna, thank you so much.